Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric C. Goodnight. Oh, can't even finish. Professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more.
Why was that funny?
I don't know. You just put it in, you put a little inflection on it, and I just wasn't expecting. You meant one artist. I'm like, I just was
weren't
not
weren't expecting me to speak.
Yeah, I don't. You're always like trying to outman me on that one, and then you went the opposite way. You went like
one artist.
I try and outman you.
Yeah, you're like one artist.
Yes, I'm written by Frank Miller.
I was about to say, you're the goddamn Eric Goodnight.
Yeah, I am wearing a pink gingham shirt, so maybe that's what did it. I don't know.
That might be it.
A pink and purple gingham shirt.
I know that shirt.
I'm a fan of this shirt.
It's a good shirt.
It is.
It's a solid shirt.
Came from Nana Republic. Oh. What do you say we talk about some comic books?
Talk about comic books? Oh, that's what we do on this show.
Oh, that is what we do.
So, folks, we got a good show. We're going to talk about comic books.
And not my shirt.
Not Eric's shirt the whole time. We're reading Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley. We're reading a whole bunch of comic books that, you know, came out this week. That's cool.
That is pretty cool.
But first, we're going to jump right in to checking in. Checking in is the part of the show where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to during the week. Eric, what have you been up to during the week?
What have I been up to?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord. I just completely blanked when you asked me that. But no, dude, I'm so excited to talk about this. Cosmos is on Netflix.
Really?
Yes.
Cool. I need to watch it.
It is so good, and I'm having to try pretty hard to not, like, I'm bending the rules a little bit more than I should to watch a couple episodes of this. I'm still on my TV diet,
mm-hmm.
So I'm only allowing myself to watch it, like, you know, late at night, like after 8 or after 9, after I've gotten some things done.
Right.
But, oh, man, it is delicious.
I've heard it's, I mean, everything I've heard about it.
It is quite choice. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, because I just finished Neil deGrasse Tyson's book,
mm-hmm.
where he covers a lot of the same material. I mean, it's not like there's going to be different physics, you know, whether it's presented in one place or another. He's covering a lot of the same sort of pop physics, astronomy. That sort of stuff, but he's going into a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
Like one episode, he talked about the golden age of Arabic science.
Wow,
which is just awesome, you know. And they were like the whole center of like the world and scientific thought because they were one of the freest societies. They didn't go into like sort of why that started to decay. But it's a really fascinating period, and all the people involved are just really amazing. He's talked a lot about Newton and, what was his name? Halley, who discovered Halley's Comet and
right.
all the other amazing things that he did. It's just fascinating. I'm terribly interested in the history of science, and it's some of the best parts of the show. I mean, and he's delightful, as you might expect.
Yeah,
Neil is.
I'm a fan. Yep. I listen to his podcast.
I can never make myself, even though I'm sure I'd like it. I just need to put together the time for it, I think.
Honestly, some of it's some of it's very good. It's really kind of, you just have to sample it. I mean, they're short regardless. None of them are really, really long, so it's never like you're biting off a whole bunch of it, and there's a lot of ads. There's a lot of ad breaks, but I'm not going to blame the guy for that.
Hey, he's got to keep himself in vests with fucking stars on him.
That's very true. There's two interesting things about Cosmos that are not really about the show itself, is the fact that it was on Fox.
Right.
Which is...
Well, do you know the story behind that?
Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I was going to say, that because a Family Guy got Seth MacFarlane is friends with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah. Do you know the story about how the show came to be? Because I think it's pretty awesome.
Was it Seth MacFarlane asked, Neil deGrasse Tyson gave Seth MacFarlane like science information on for a Family Guy episode. I know that.
Maybe that sounds likely like how they met each other.
Yeah.
But my understanding is the Fox network came to Seth MacFarlane and said, you've made us a lot of money and, you've done all these shows for us and we're going to give you this huge budget and you can do whatever you want. And he was like, holy shit, what am I going to do? I should do something important. So he turns around and he asks Neil, he's like, you're smart. What should I do that will help mankind? And of course, he's like, you should reboot Cosmos by Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly why the dude from Family Guy made Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I really don't like Seth MacFarlane. But I will give him all the credit he deserves for doing this. It's a good thing. It educates people.
It is. I mean, I think that like all of us, he's a complicated person and he's done some shitty things. And I'm not a fan of every episode of Family Guy necessarily, but I'm mostly indifferent to him. He can do what he wants. He made this.
Yes, he did.
It's incredibly good. It is incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, that's the number one thing I've heard is that.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Apart from being very good information and being very watchable, the art is some of the just it just it, it's hard to explain how well made it is. There's an end of one episode where it shows the Milky Way galaxy colliding with the Andromeda galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's describing how this will happen over billions of years. And it's just this gorgeous computer simulation of these two supermassive, collections of objects just swirling around each other. And it's just indescribable, just how amazing. And you just have to think about all the effort and research that had to go into pretty much every little aspect of putting something like that together. It's just absolutely remarkable.
I'm going to have to make some time for it.
I wholeheartedly recommend it.
Especially now it's on Netflix. I don't have an excuse. Anything else you want to talk about here?
You know, I bought myself some vinyl, two of my favorite Queen albums.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I bought Sheer Heart Attack, and because I like the song Sheer Heart Attack, I bought News of the World, which contains the song Sheer Heart Attack, and not the album Sheer Heart Attack. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I understand.
It doesn't. I'm confused.
I understand. It's confusing, but I understand.
The album Sheer Heart Attack does not have the song Sheer Heart Attack on it.
Is News of the World? Does News of the World have? Is that We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions?
Yes, those are the first three songs. We Are the Champions, and then Sheer Heart Attack.
That album cover of News of the World is pretty good.
And I'm glad you bring it up. Did you know that Alex Ross actually put it in Kingdom Come is an Easter egg.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's if you unfold that album, the LP, there's like a screaming, you know, crowd of like men and women,
mm-hmm.
and he lifts it directly and puts it like almost exactly a perfect copy in Kingdom Come.
Cool.
Yeah. So, big Queen fan. This is the kind of thing that I'm privy to. This is the knowledge I'm privy to. I was in a gang of Queen nerds just after high school.
What'd you guys call yourself?
Hey, you.
good name.
Yeah. Well,
solid.
We were too busy talking about Brian May writing songs about faster than light travel.
It's very important.
I was actually thinking about how Brian May needs to do a guest spot on Cosmos because he's a fucking he's got a PhD in goddamn astrophysics.
It makes sense.
It absolutely does. At the very least, he should fucking like do a cover of the theme song.
Yeah.
Break out the old Red Special. So I'm checking in with two astrophysicians.
Cool. It's good.
Feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. I'm going to kind of keep up with that theme a little bit, at least space theme.
I regret that I haven't seen this film yet.
Yeah, I'm kind of ashamed that it took me this long to see it.
Yeah, but no, I probably won't watch another movie for another year and a half.
But I saw Guardians of the Galaxy finally.
Hooray.
Go see this movie, Eric.
I'm excited.
It's so good.
Facebook apparently thinks I'm in it.
That's true. Facebook does think you're in it.
Should we just let that hang?
I think so.
Explain it.
No. No one needs to know.
I think everyone needs to know that Facebook thinks I look like Chris Pratt.
You know.
Okay.
You're both action heroes.
That's true. I do get shot at a lot.
But yeah, this movie. I don't know if I like it more than the Avengers. But it's close. It's tricky. It's up for debate. Yeah, coming out of the movie, I'm like, I don't, like, I remember how, like, awestruck I felt after seeing the Avengers the first time. Like, seeing all those characters on screen together. But this is certainly a bigger achievement than the Avengers.
That's actually pretty shocking, because it felt pretty big, the Avengers.
Well, not saying that Avengers wasn't impressive and amazing, like, as a comic book movie, I thought it was almost perfect. But this is introducing this whole world. I mean, maybe 5 minutes of the movie is on Earth. And it's all background on Peter Quill, Star-Lord. And that's it. Everything else is in space with aliens and weird worlds and new races and weird rivalries and wars and stuff. And it sets up, it's all set up very clearly and executed. I don't know. I think about as perfect as it could be.
Well, now I'm really excited to see how this goes over.
Because, like, aside from Peter Quill, who's at least looks human, you have a talking tree, a talking raccoon, and, like, an assassin and a big brutish psychopath. And all of them look weird and are not... before Avengers, you had Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, movies... Almost all the characters were at least introduced somewhere. Black Widow and Hawkeye didn't have their own movies, but they were in those other movies. Like, the mm-hmm. audiences at least had some kind of introduction to these guys, people who didn't read comic books. If you haven't read the Guardians of the Galaxy comic books, you're still fine watching this movie. It introduces all these characters, gives them great motivations, and they're all so likable and charming.
That's good to know.
And they should win an Oscar for the special effects for Groot and Rocket. They are the most unbelievably well-crafted digital characters I've ever seen. This ending is made me fucking tear up. It's so touching.
Well, you are a tremendous wuss.
I'm a mark. What can I say? But it's You need to see this, Eric. You need
fucking,
to go
fucking wrestling nerd.
I know. You need to go see this movie. It's so good. I really don't even like that term very much, but you know. But
I think it's probably very apt.
Yeah, it is. This movie is amazing. It's hilarious. I think it's the funniest of the Marvel movies. James Gunn knows what he's doing. He did an amazing job with this.
Well, I'm very excited to see it after hearing you say that.
Yeah, I can't imagine you not liking it. It's so good.
It's a big deal at the box office.
Yeah, it's about
about
to pass Transformers for biggest movie of the summer.
Good. Fuck them.
Yes, exactly. But go, if you're listening and you haven't seen this movie, go see this movie. It is, all the hype exceeded my expectations. We're going to jump over to Weekly Floppies. Floppies part of the week. Weekly Floppies is a part of the show where Eric and I talk about the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. Generally, we're right, so you know you should listen. Right, Eric?
I concur with us.
Okay, I concur with us as well. We're going to start off our indie book of the week. Is Godzilla Cataclysm. I have to say it in that voice because that's cataclysm in it.
Godzilla Cataclysm.
Writer Colin Bunn. Art by Dave. How do you think you say his last name?
Oh, if it comes up, I'll tell you. Wachter.
Wachter. Okay.
I have a friend who's a name who's a Wachter. I don't think he drew this book.
No, I don't think so. I bought this book mainly because I liked the art in the previews, and I'm a big fan of Colin Bunn.
Colin's pretty good.
Yeah, I met him. We met him at Tampa Bay Comic Con. He was a super nice guy, and
he seemed sad. Honestly, it was like, Colin, your work's really good, and he's like, that's nice.
I think that's how we like half the artists we meet. I mean, and he's a writer, but I mean artists in general.
Yeah,
general
I mean
term.
it's
they're
like,
either
in
like
in the broader sense, not in the visual art sense.
Correct. And they're like usually they're like super jazzed or just kind of sad people. Not meaning like sad because he makes tons of cool stuff, but like sad just in like, you know, low E.
I guess maybe he was, I don't know.
He was nice to me and he wasn't as sadding.
I made him sad.
Maybe it's you.
It is me. It's like, look at that big, beautiful man. I'll never be that. And now he's reminding me that Venom was taken away from me. I'm going to kill myself.
Well, Venom, they're about to go to Planet Venom in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Uh-oh.
Where the planet the symbiote's from.
Well, I mean, I assume that's what you meant.
Okay. But this is back to Godzilla.
Yes, back to Godzilla.
We strayed a bit. Comic is basically set in a world where the kaiju have destroyed everything and vanished. And now they're coming back. I don't know. It's not.
And now they're coming back.
It's kind of just, it centers on this little society where they kind of just forge to survive. And then suddenly, holy shit, there's monsters again.
I kind of wish I had a stronger opinion on this. I just sort of don't really care for Godzilla or the kaiju genre very much. I think that's why I wasn't very excited by Pacific Rim.
Right.
The art is solid. I am a big fan of Colin. I think he's a cool guy, and I would buy this just because his name's on it. I think the combination of a genre I don't care for mixed with people that I do like, you know, and art that I enjoy, it just kind of falls flat. It would have to be incredibly stellar, and it's good.
Competent.
Yeah.
Solid.
I think it's definitely competent. It's definitely solid. Although I'm not sure why the scan and I'm not reading a scan. I have a legitimate copy from Comixology. There's a white line on the left side of like every other page.
Oh yeah, I didn't even notice that.
You didn't?
I didn't notice it until just now. You pointed it out, and I see it, but I did not notice it before.
It sticks out like a friggin' sore thumb to me.
I don't know. It's probably whatever IDW's provided to.
Sure.
To Comixology, I'm guessing.
If you have it, you have a different iPad than I do.
I do.
So it's not a hardware problem. It's clearly in the source.
Yeah.
I
did not notice it though. Tells you how.
Yeah.
How closely I look.
How attentive you are.
Yeah.
It is. It's a nice looking book. I wish I, you know, had stronger feelings about it. How do you feel about it?
I really enjoy the art. It's hard to follow up. The last thing I read got in Godzilla ish. The Godzilla license was James Stokoe's, his Godzilla series, which it's.
I regret. That's the one everyone was talking about, where they, instead of writing out the onomatopoeia, they did like a waveform.
Yeah, I was about to mention. Yeah, it's really cool. It's hard to follow Stokoe, but this, Wachter does an admirable job. He does a good job. The monsters all look, impressive. I'm interested. I think that this is kind of an interesting idea on the Godzilla kind of property, in that this is everything is destroyed, and now the monsters are coming back without some kind of like modern civilization fighting them or anything like that. It's just kind of these people struggling to survive. I think that's something new, at least, it's brought to it. I do like kaiju and big monster battle things much more than Eric does, and I'm bi because of that. I would say that if you like Pacific Rim or Godzilla movies and stuff, you'll like this. If not, you'll probably go, it's fine. But I think Eric and I represent both sides of this.
Yes.
I'm a bi. He's probably, are you a do not buy, Eric?
I wouldn't go as far as to say a do not buy. I mean, just the comic fan in me, like, enjoys this.
Mm-hmm.
Even as not a fan of the genre, I still enjoyed it, and I would certainly recommend it to people that are fans of the genre, and you know, people that just would buy comics for the sake of good art. I think this is very strong art, and I would even say that there is some of that Stokoe influence in this.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not. Yeah, there is certainly a lot of it in the art, but it...
I did want to throw this comparison out there, that this is the Walking Dead Godzilla.
It kind of is.
Yep.
I doubt this is going to go 130 issues, though.
You never know.
Hey, guys, you might notice we're not reading Walking Dead this week, even though it came out.
Thank God.
So I'm a pretty solid buy. I think Eric's like a squishy buy.
I don't even want to say it's squishy. Say squishy. It's just I'm just a little bit flat on it.
Okay.
Like I said, I wish I had a stronger opinion on it. It's good, and there's clientele out there for this. There is a home for this, and people already know if they like this property or not. So, you know, guys, go after it. It is a good, solid book. It knows what it's doing. And Colin Bunn, you. A scholar and a gentleman.
So there you guys go. Double buy on Godzilla Cataclysm. Cataclysm number one.
Now say it in your death metal voice.
Godzilla Cataclysm.
That's what it needed. There you go.
Okay. Next up in Marvel. Don't worry, folks. I'm not going to do the whole show like that. We're going to Hulk number 5. This is the Adjectiveless Hulk series. Written by the gorgeous Jerry Duggan. I really like the fact that the credits are like the old style, Marvel 60s style credits. Monstrous Jesus. Mark Bagley on pencils. Dandy Andy Hennessy on inks. Racin' Jason Keith on colors. And Cool Hand Corey Pettit doing the letters.
Indeed. Duggan says he wrote them himself.
Yeah, he did. Jerry Duggan is, he's until recently, he was on Nerd Poker with Brian Posehn. On the D&D podcast. But now that he writes every comic book on Earth, he doesn't have time to play D&D. But the basic premise, I mean, this is a good jumping off point, I would say. Like, if you haven't been reading this, I think this is a good enough point as any to pick it up. Basically, Bruce Banner's brain has been repaired by Tony Stark, and it kind of triggered this weird personality. It's in the form of the Hulk, but has Banner smarts. But it's kind of not quite malevolent. It's not like he's evil, but he clearly is
he's a little dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. He's not Bruce Banner. He calls himself Doc Green. He's not the Hulk. He's not Bruce Banner. He's Doc Green. Which the Hulk has always been the most interesting to me when it's playing with all these kind of personalities constantly in battle with each other.
Mm.
And this is kind of almost in the 90s, there was the Scientist Hulk, which was Bruce Banner's intellect in the body of the Hulk, but he couldn't rage out. Like he couldn't, if he raged out, he actually reverted to Bruce Banner's form. Peter David played with this stuff a lot. But this is kind of the other side of the coin where he has the intelligence of Bruce Banner, but not the personality of him in the form of the Hulk. What did you think about this, Eric? I like this.
I like it okay. Something about it doesn't quite sit right to me. Something about it's a little bit on the dumb side.
I would say this is a very comic book. We've said we use this adjective a lot.
Yeah.
It's very comic booky, and it starts with those credits. There's lots of very comic booky things in this.
Like vaguely.
Yeah. His art is one of those things.
Yes. It's a little dopey. I don't think it's particularly trying to be something else and failing.
No, I think that's what it's going for. It's like, what really tells me that is those credits.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry Duggan's like, well, here, look at this is what I'm going for. I want this to feel kind of like a 60s comic book, kind of like that. At least not necessarily. I mean, obviously they don't all have thought balloons and shit like that, but you know, that the kind of goofy melodrama.
It feels a little younger to me as well. Like almost the same sort of audience they're going after back when we were reading Superior Spider-Man, you know.
Yeah.
It feels teenager, maybe even kid friendly.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of thing that is appropriate for a younger audience, but doesn't particularly, at least in a semi-transparent way, it doesn't necessarily talk down to them.
Right. It's not Mark Waid. Mark Waid was writing the Hulk before this, and he's aiming higher. Like, he tries to be, you know, write a smarter comic book, quote-unquote. And I think this is just like, hey, look, this is a comic book. If you're a 13-year-old boy, can pick this up and read it, and he'd probably love it, because it's the Hulk, you know, going back in time, or going, actually, forward in time, to the end of time, and picking up through a trophy room, which, I understand, it's kind of neat, but I think they had a nod to have you ever read the Future Imperfect storyline?
No.
The Hulk, where he fights the future version of himself, Maestro, which is, he's in the trophy room, I guess, a stuffed Maestro, which I guess is a nod to that. But again, the whole trophy room thing is just kind of played out at this point. Like, look, it's Wolverine's skeleton. Oh, yeah, we know. Okay. I mean, it's not done poorly, but I'm just kind of tired of it. I'm a squishy boy on this.
Are you?
Yeah. I like the idea of the Hulk, this Doc Green, excuse me, hunting down all these gamma irradiated people. If there's less Hulks in the world, I'm cool with that. No more Thunderbolt Ross being a red Hulk. And we don't need a blue Abomination hanging around.
Yeah.
I'm
Jesus.
Yeah. Him resetting the Hulkiverse a little bit. I'm okay with it. If this comic result, I mean, it's comic booky, and it kind of comic booky in the way I don't mind it.
It's not so bad. I think I don't know. I think it's right now, it's one that you can safely ignore.
Right.
Honestly. So I would even say I'm an unexcited, do not buy. Like, it's not one that I'm going to condemn. But the same thing, if any of this sounds appealing, there's no reason not to check it out. It's not like it's terrible. I don't regret reading it.
No.
I didn't like throw my iPad across the room like, what the fuck is this shit?
Guys, that's like the squishiest non-decision thing we've... I don't think we...
I know, good God. We're so indecisive.
We set new limits where... But There you go. Whatever that was, this Hulk number five. I can't even say. I guess it was a split decision, but it was
great. It's a split decision, but it's a, yeah, good lord.
Okay, jumping over to the other book in Marvel this week is Original Sin number 7. We're jumping back into this series, trying to get us into it at the end, see if we can get kind of any kind of closure on what the fuck is happening in this art, in this event. Like, there's so many crossovers going on right now, but I have almost no interest in any of them because this main of series is just kind of meaningless to me. There's so many characters in it, and I don't understand the reasoning for half of them to be in it.
A lot of them just are there to stand around.
Yeah, I don't. This is seeing like an old Nick Fury beating the shit out of everybody.
There's a Bible quote in this.
There is a Bible quote in this, which did not help my opinion of it. But he whispers something to Thor, which is all it takes to make Thor apparently, you know, lose the ability to grab his hammer anymore.
Well, that's what's been telegraphed, you know, this whole time. I figured that was why we picked it back up here, is because that's the event. I assume that's the event that, like, he's no longer worthy to hold the hammer.
I did not know that was happening in this issue before I picked it.
If I was going to guess, I'd say that's what that was.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. It's, like, clearly foreshadowing all that. I don't know. But I'm sure that this is going to be explored in Thor about what he whispered to him and what it all means.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can't. I zoomed in as far as I could. I could not make it out.
Yeah, the resolution just isn't there.
There's an A in there. A L D.
They said asshole.
You're an asshole, Thor. Oh!
That's that face. Oh!
But I could try and explain the plot of this, but it makes like half of it's completely meaningless to me.
Yeah, it's a little incomprehensible.
Which kind of saddens me because Jason Aaron generally is a pretty solid writer, but all these event comics are kind of written by commission.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Like, here's what's going to happen, and you write it all down. So, I don't know. Some, like, I really liked, I can't think of the name of the last one. Infamy. But I really liked Infinity. This is disappointing. Theodore's art is fine. I like the.
So I think it's excellent. It's, yeah, beautiful.
I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, it's up,
fine.
It's up to par. It's what it's
like
I
a,
expect.
It's like a. It's like a B minus.
Solid, no, B. It's, solid it's, B plus, Eric.
It is good. I enjoy it. I especially like Glowing Thing.
Yeah, which I'm. Moon. That means he's
Glowing Thing on the moon.
I don't know what that. He's corrupted or something. I don't know. But
I have no idea.
I don't either. We stopped reading this because it was unintelligible and dumb, and it's still kind of unintelligible and dumb.
It has Spidey slinging webs at eyeballs in space.
It does have that. There's some cool stuff happening, but it's not worth your money. Do not buy this.
I don't know, man. I kind of liked it.
Okay. Defend it. Give me your case. Why did you like it? Tell me. Sell it to me, Eric. I'm at the store holding this book. Why should I buy it?
Oh, good lord. You know, I don't know. Like, I've not been as down on this event as you have been this whole time. It's retarded, admittedly. I don't know why I enjoy it. I just kind of do. It's kind of got that Plan 9 from Outer Space thing going. Maybe that's it.
That's not good.
It's not necessarily great, admittedly. I don't know. I'm not going to try and defend it, and I don't even know that if I'm a buy on it.
Okay. Well.
But I do. There's a part of me that enjoys this.
I think it's just because you like The Watcher so much.
I do like The Watcher, and maybe that is it, but you think that would make me not like this?
Well, at the end of it, there's like 7 watchers just show up. So
yeah, there's a whole a murder of watchers.
They're gonna introduce a new watcher whose name was different, but now they're gonna change it to a Watu Junior. But he's just gonna go by a Watu.
It's a Watu 2.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a Juno buyer. What are you? Which side of the fence are you sitting on in this one?
No, I honestly, I'm pretty comfortable saying, you know, you don't need to buy this, but I enjoy it on some weird level, and maybe it's masochistic. I don't know. There's something I like about it, and it's hard to put my finger on. The art probably has a lot to do with it. It's probably coloring my experience and making me enjoy it, because I think that it's awesome. It kind of rules.
The art is good. I like Deodato. A lot of people, some people don't. I'm a fan.
No, I think it's great, and I think that if it were a lesser artist taking this on, because he's really putting his all into it, and I think that it's taking a story that is kind of a mess, and it's distilling it, at least for me, to where it's something palatable. Like, I enjoy it.
Okay.
But don't buy this book.
Okay. That's a double do not buy, sort of, on original sin number 7.
This is a squishy week so far.
I don't foresee it changing very much. Next, we're moving to DC. First, we're checking back in with Constantine. Number 17. We read number 1. Remember that, Eric? I think. Was it number 1?
It was a low number. I remember.
It was a while ago. That was an early episode.
It was a month of Sundays ago.
Yeah, and I saw the solicitation for this, and it's like, oh, Constantine travels back in time to World War I. He has to deal with it. Okay, well, I'll read the credits first. Ray Fox is writer. Edgar Salazar pencils. Jay Leaston doing inks. Richard and Tanya Worry doing colors. Taylor Esposito on letters. And I thought that there would be more of him, like, fighting war with magic, not him basically just, like, trying to figure out what's happening in his time without him.
Yeah, this issue is a mess. If you're not already following this story, you don't have much continuity. You have no fucking clue. Who are these people? What's going on? Why does he keep exploding?
He's talking to a dagger that has something powerful inside of it.
Yeah, that was the most normal thing. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that's all about, but I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, and there's like these two people trying to fight this other thing in the present day, and now that he's not there, he can't help, and it's going to change everything. And now he's like facing a guy who taught him in the future. And
yeah, he's hanging out with Magic Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, and then he's, in the end, he just teleports into the future. And I bought this expecting that, oh, cool, like, magic in World War I, like, for a little bit. No. None of that, really. Not much. And mostly, he just kind of runs away from bullets. That's the only World War I thing that happens in this book. Oh my god, guys with rifles.
Some guys speak German at him.
Yeah, there's German. I mean, the art's okay. I like it enough, I guess.
I think okay is kind of the way to describe it. There are some interesting the best thing about it is the damn cover, which is very misleading.
It is. That's what I saw the cover, and I saw the solicitation, and it's like, oh, cool. But no, none of that. He doesn't pick up a rifle. That's garbage.
Clearly, everyone but the writer of this book realized what the cool part of this story would have been. But he's like, nope, he's got to talk to a knife and fall to pieces, and the blind guy's going to stab a ghost, and
I do not buy on this. I really was expecting more from this.
I think we've really picked a bad issue to jump in on. Like, I don't think that
Well, I'm sure if you've been reading this, it's fine because it's like you're tied up in these characters. But I thought this is like a one little one-shot story that would be, you know, fun to read for a bit. No, it's not.
If we're going to read any one World War One story, we should be reading the Savage Wolverine story.
Very true.
Which the second one is coming out before too long. We like 2 weeks ago, read the first one.
I believe so.
3 weeks ago.
I don't know. Time.
That's one we have to follow up on.
That's much better than this.
That is indeed much better than this. But and I think you were also driving at the point that this is not necessarily bad. It's just a terrible jumping in point.
Yeah, you have don't. If this is your first issue of Constantine, no, go back somewhere else and figure out a jump. Go to like the issue after the first trade or the second trade or something. I don't. Not this one. I'm a do not buy on Constantine number 17. Especially if you're a fresh reader like we are, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So, Eric just went, which means double buy. Oh my god, double do not buy. Sorry, I retract the double buy.
Yes.
I almost finished. I didn't finish the statement, so it didn't become official. But it was close. That's what... man. Skin of my teeth. Next up, and lastly, is Batman number 34. Story by Scott Snyder and Jerry Duggan, written by Jerry Duggan. So you told you, he's writing every comic book on Earth now.
Yeah, yeah, and I knew I saw his name in more than one place.
Art by Mateo Scalera, which is neat. And colors by Lee Lufferge, letters by Steve Wands. Why is
Scalera art neat?
Because it's different than... Chris Burnham was doing that many. Greg Capullo. No, I like Scalera. That's what I'm saying. I like his art. I like him. And I like that it's different than what we've been reading in Batman.
Well, what else has Scalera done? This is top shelf stuff.
He drew a comic book you really, really, really didn't like.
Oh yeah.
Dead Body Road, if you remember it.
I knew you were going to say Dead Body Road. Yeah, it was real. I thoroughly disliked it. I was just thinking about it the other day. I'm like, wow, I hate this book. No, this is top shelf artwork. I enjoyed the hell out of this issue.
Yeah, it was very good.
It was excellent. I thought it, like the first couple of pages, I was like, man, this is grisly. The dude like killed a cat, and I'm sure you cried.
I didn't get any connection with the cat, so it wasn't as bad.
I thought that you didn't need a connection. You were just automatic, like, oh, kitty.
I didn't cry, though. That's what I'm saying. I didn't cry.
Okay. But, like, the guy just, like, sneaks up behind her and just chokes her with piano wire. I'm like, god damn.
Yeah. You,
it's, like, just, it's brutal.
But I will tell you the other place we've seen Mateo Scalera.
Uh-huh.
That was Venom.
That explains a lot. You know, top marks all around. This is a really good, interesting story. Beautiful artwork, just an absolute joy of a comic book to read. The only thing that I'm a little bit perturbed about is I'm not really sure if there's going to be more of it or not, because it really seems like it's going to fall into this Future's End event.
This is completely an isolated story. I mean, it's
that's the way I was reading it as well, but the ending is a little bit of
it is gonna
head scratcher.
Jerry Duggan is gonna be writing his own Batman series called it's something basically the Wayne Manor is gonna become Arkham Asylum for some reason. Basically,
right.
Arkham Asylum is gonna be destroyed or become uninhabitable. I forget what the press really said, but basically Bruce Wayne is gonna donate his manor and it's gonna become Arkham Asylum, and Jerry Duggan's going to be writing that series. And it's going to be like a horror series, which you see a lot of, I mean, that's the grisly kind of stuff in here. I think that's what we're going to be seeing in that, basically.
Well, Nate.
Yeah. I mean, the story is, like Eric said, this kind of the serial killer, but he doesn't want to be, I think the point of him is that he's not a Batman villain. He just, like, is like doesn't want to be known, doesn't do like he's not Zaz where he like marks himself and does some does creepy shit after he kills somebody. He just murders people and then buries their bodies in like a potter's grave, just disappears in the shadows, never to be seen. And Batman finds him because Batman's the best. And he can be, Batman can look like a woman.
Yeah, that was weird.
But Scalera's art is really, really good. And this is a really good issue. This is, I would say, probably my pick of the week from the books we read.
Well, it's been, it's kind of a weak showing, but this is still a strong book.
Yeah.
It's a solid book. Like, I think it was the first book I read this week. And I mean, as I was turning every page, I was just like, this is awesome. Like I was genuinely impressed.
Yeah. I'm a buy.
I'm a do not buy. Wait, no, it's awesome. Buy it.
Yeah. Double buy a Batman 34. I think that's going to put an end to the floppiest part of the week, Eric.
Mm-hmm. Floppy over.
There you go.
Floppy out.
Floppy out. So with that, we are going to move on to Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of the show where Eric and I will give you guys some advance notice about what we're reading. Just like, you know, how book clubs work. And we'll all read it, and then Eric and I will discuss it on the air. This week, we are doing Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley. And actually, I should read the full title. Seconds, a graphic novel by Brian Lee O'Malley.
What a friggin' clever name.
It is. Brian Lee O'Malley, famously, writer of Scott Pilgrim. Writer and artist of Scott Pilgrim.
Hey, you know what? This is an appropriate use of the words graphic novel.
Yes. As a format. It is.
Yes.
Yes, precisely.
It is a format, not a euphemism.
It's not a genre. Where do you want to start with this, Eric?
The first thing that springs to my mind is I kind of want to hate Brian Lee O'Malley. He is really talented.
He is.
I mean, he acts like a complete shithead in a lot of different ways. Just sort of shows his ass on social media and just acts like a dope. He's got his shit together. He knows exactly how to put something together that's very good. I'm not going to say he's like the most absolute gifted artist in the world, but he can make a book look very good with surprisingly simple artwork.
Right.
And he is also a very good storyteller, even though, I mean, he's got his quirks and it's very clear, like, if you didn't know that this book was written by the same guy that did Scott Pilgrim, you would very much assume that it was either heavily influenced by or, if not, you know, written by the same person. It's got a lot of Scott Pilgrim in it. Katie is pretty much Scott Pilgrim as a girl with Sonic the Hedgehog hair.
True. And,
why does she have Sonic the Hedgehog hair?
Identifiable in silhouette.
I guess.
That's what they say. If you're going to do a character, should be identifiable in silhouette. She is certainly that.
Well, there we are.
And I believe Hazel, the character Hazel, is basically Brian Lee O'Malley if he was a girl.
That's odd.
That's what I was feeling, like, this kind of quiet weirdo who is an art student and...
Well, to be fair, Robbie, there are a lot of quiet, weirdo art students.
I know. But it just feels like, and I don't know, it just feels that he's in her more than anything else. But the basic premise of this is that the main character's name is Katie. She is a chef, a successful chef at a restaurant. But she mm-hmm. is trying to, she does not own this restaurant. The restaurant is known because of her, but she doesn't have any ownership stake in it. She wants to start her own. And this weird spirit leaves her a little box with a mushroom in it that says, you write down your mistake, eat a mushroom, go to sleep, and when you wake up, the mistake will have been undone. And she finds more than one mushroom. And problems start happening. because of that. And it went in a direction I was certainly not expecting in the end. I think that's the main thing, other than what Eric has just said about him being very talented and then being a very excellent storyteller, that it went a lot darker than I, and kind of more supernatural than I was expecting, honestly. Hmm.
Even though, I mean, you say supernatural, but I think it's worth, it's worth pointing out that it's a different idea. What this spirit, you call it a spirit, it's not a ghost.
Right.
They make a point to discuss that, and it's like a Roman, like, house deity or something like that. You know, it's like the collective consciousness of a place.
Right. It's something I would expect in a Miyazaki film.
It is very Miyazaki, isn't it?
It is. That's the thing that really struck me.
And really, that's a very perfect sort of metaphor, because like almost all Miyazaki films, the protagonist is female.
Yes.
It's from a female point of view, which I think he does that very well. Like, there's a lot of moments like where she reboots a reality, and then Max is her husband, and she's discovering all these things, and she's like, "Does every boy play guitar?" Which is something that women have said to me, you know, when I have a guitar in my house that I don't play, and they're like, "Do you just like, does that just come with being a guy?" I'm like, apparently it does.
There was, I want to, that fact that you brought that up specifically, the comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Right.
The one with, what is the dude's, the guy who founded Mystery Science Theater.
I
don't remember his name.
They're actually Mike or Joel something.
Yeah, I think it's Joel. I want to say it's Joel. But he was talking to Jerry Seinfeld, and he's like, the smart people are the guys who sell guitars, because everyone buys guitars. But he's like, he asked Seinfeld, like, do you own guitars? He's like, yeah, how many guitars have you bought in your lifetime? Jerry's like, three. He's like, do you play guitar? No. And Joel's like, I own six guitars. I do not play guitar. And he's like, the smart guys are the guys who are selling the equipment to the dudes, not the dudes who want to play guitar because they're making all the money. But I digress. That's
we're all dumb as hell.
Yes.
That's what comes with being male.
All males want to play guitar.
Yes. It doesn't hurt that we think it's going to get us laid.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah, that is 99% of it.
I wouldn't say 99.
98%.
Good thing you backed off a little. I can respect that.
I think it's probably pretty accurate with either one of those numbers. The other 1 or 2% is because we have music in our soul.
Right, exactly. Music in our soul. But yeah, it's just we're following her around, and she's eating more and more of these mushrooms. The spirit that it basically dresses like a hipster because it just wears the clothes that have been left there by Hazel, which are all bought at thrift stores. Even though she eats the clothes sometimes.
She just eats them and it becomes part of her.
Yeah. And she's getting more upset, and there's what becomes an enemy spirit is introduced into the house, restaurant. She lives in the restaurant as well, above it.
House restaurant.
And she's basically coming to terms with the fact that her life continues to change and she's more and more out of control. And she knit the first mushroom was completely altruistic reasons. Like, Hazel got burnt and she didn't want that to happen by hot oil. And then it just kept spinning further and further, further out of control. I think it really goes rather dark, darker than I expected. I think that's the thing that stood out the most to me. Is that,
well, here's an interesting question, or at least interesting to me. Where did you expect it to go? That it divulged?
I expected it to do the Scott Pilgrim thing. Mm-hmm. It might be like melancholy. It might be melancholy, but probably centered on relationships or something. You know, like mm-hmm. a person to person thing. Like that's what hit me most about about Scott Pilgrim was his relationship. That's mm-hmm. When I felt sad in that reading that book, that was what I expected this to do. Like she keeps trying to reset things and it makes her life worse in respect to relationships. But instead we get pages where it looks like it's fucking Attack on Titan outside.
Yeah.
And there's giant monsters and there's skeletons that people are not surprised about. They're just walking around and there's a monster in the closet and you know, she's being like trying to be eaten alive at one point. There's what's on the menu at the restaurant are weird fantasy creatures. Like Pokemon or something. They're not real things.
Is that what the best damn bird in town was?
It's a Gypsyrose.
The hell's a Gypsyrose?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
There's also Buffalo Style Antillean Cave Rail. Odomo Farms, a Bellsprout, which I think a Bellsprout is a Pokemon. I'm fairly certain that is an actual Pokemon.
I skipped over that. Bellsprout is totally a Pokemon.
Yeah. It becomes almost like a horror book at a certain mm-hmm. point, which kind of, and it's done very well. Like I said, that page where she looks outside the window and it's like giant monster titan guys, like skeleton guys, like destroying shit. It's done very, 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 very well. Really Miyazaki, obviously that's a lot of it there. And actually most of the characters are female. I mean, most of the main mm-hmm. characters, it's Katie and Hazel and the spirit. And then you have kind of Max is the fourth biggest character.
He's very much an outside force. You're not really getting in Max's head very much.
No, he's just there.
He just shows up. He's even sort of an abstract illustration of maleness.
He is. That's very true.
He just sort of shows up. He's wearing a leather jacket. I'm like, look at me. I'm a hot shot. I'm Max.
He literally almost says that at one point.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I find that interesting. That is one of the things that this is very well written from that women's point of view. It's a hell of a book.
No, the dialogue is like Scott Pilgrim. It feels like people. Like it's very.
Oh yeah, it's got a lot of life to it.
Yeah, these are. It really they're, does. They're fully realized. These are not just concepts of people.
They're very flawed and very vulnerable. I mean, you see. You see Katie shitting her brains up at one point.
Yes.
Because she gets like food poisoning from a McDonald's burger.
That burger looked pretty damn good.
It did. It did. And I bet Brian Lee O'Malley is an insufferable foodie.
From what I've seen on his Twitter, he doesn't post everything, but he does check at a restaurant sometimes. His art is like sometimes simplistic, I guess, a simplistic style, but it tells the story very well, and when he needs an expression to really say something, it delivers.
Well, there are artists that draw things simply because they cannot, you know, draw more complicated things. And then there are people that can just do something simply just because, you know, why not? And he's more in that camp. He actually clearly has a lot of drawing ability and, you know, brush skills, and there's a lot going on here there's a lot of skill. He's doing things very well.
Yeah, that there's that the panel with Max doing the scary fake smile.
Yes.
Yeah,
that expression is pulled off quite well.
Yeah, it reminded me of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho.
Ah.
A little bit. That kind of veneer. cheerfulness, which is completely fake.
We've discussed his influences a little bit, haven't we?
Yeah, I think in the Scott Pilgrim, it's kind of...
Well, that was the longest time ago.
That was a long time ago.
That was 63 episodes ago.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it is. The main influence is obviously like an Osamu Tezuka.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing that stands out the most. Like when you think about the simplistic characters and the backgrounds that are just full of line work and detail. That's carried through to a lot of manga, and he's got tons of manga influence. I'm even seeing a good bit of Rumiko Takahashi in this. Rumiko Takahashi is, she's the mangaka that did Ranma One Half. Are you familiar with it?
I've heard the name before.
It's been around for fucking ever. It is a million billion years old. I'm pretty sure it was drawn on a cave.
Hey guys, 1 million billion.
Yes. 1 million billion.
That's a lot.
Years old. That is a number that Neil deGrasse Tyson taught me. They both sort of have this way of drawing these little tiny cute people, and I think he's absorbed a lot of that. The people are kind of squat and cute and deformed even more so than they were in Scott Pilgrim.
I was about to say, like, you look at especially some of the sequences, like when he's drawing big rooms with lots of people, I mean, it further drives that home. They're like almost chibi.
Yes.
Like people.
And he kind of stretches it depending on sort of how he's feeling or what he wants to do in the panel. And I think that it's actually pretty impressive, you know, the way he floats out of one or the other.
Right.
And it does not feel inconsistent.
No, it doesn't.
It can honestly be a very difficult thing to make different stylistic choices about drawing a character differently. I don't know. Like, I think it is much more of an Eastern culture to do that, to have shifts, but even those are, I think, more radical. Like, there'll be something consistent, like a full size, and then there'll be the chibi size that'll just be sort of thrown in, spicing it up. He just sort of seamlessly transitions from, like, just basically whatever suits his need.
Right.
And it doesn't feel sloppy or inconsistent or whatever. It just suits the gravity of the moment. And it's pretty impressive.
No, it works very well.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It's actually very impressive. It's a very impressive work of art, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I was just about to say, like, have you read the Scott Pilgrim in color?
No, but I got in a long conversation at the comic book store when I picked up my copy. You know, one of the clerks, one of the ones at Emerald City that I do not know by name, but I have known for a long time, and I'm a bad person for not knowing his name. But I talked to him for a long time, and he's like, man, I love Scott Pilgrim. I think he even sold me my first Scott Pilgrim book. That's how long I've known this guy.
Yeah.
He's like, I love Scott Pilgrim, and the colors are great, and they do such a great job. And that I think even stands out about this one, that the colors, they don't try and do too much. They definitely add to the story. They add to the mood. They add to the atmosphere. They absolutely enhance what's going on with the story and the artwork, and it all comes together really truly beautifully.
He also has an assistant, and you mentioned all those manga influences. He had an assistant, I believe, on volume 6 and 7 of Scott Pilgrim as well. I think it's interesting that he has all these manga influences, and he has the drawing assistant, much like it's in the very front. Jason Fisher is the assistant's name. Dustin Harbin did the letters, and Nathan Fairburn did the colors.
Might have even met Dustin Harbin. He's from North Kakalaki. I don't know why the name sounds so familiar. Maybe I just know him from some work he's done.
The way that the time jumps work and the revisions and all that, it's quite complicated storytelling and how well it's executed.
Oh, yeah. At no point does it ever become a huge fucking mess.
No, you're never you're confused because she's confused.
Yes, and it works.
Yes, it does. Do you get anything from, like, the moral of the story, quote-unquote, thing, Eric? Or is it, you know...
Elaborate on your question.
I'm just, like... It made me think about it a little bit because she's as old as I am. She's 29 in this. I'm 29. Just turned 29 recently. And I just... I'm thinking about myself in a similar situation. Like, would I... I mean, it's very kind of a tempting thing. Like, you can eat a mushroom and make things go away.
Mm-hmm.
But it causes all these problems, which is logical. Like, obviously, you can't... Like, rewriting history changes things, the good things as well as the bad. And I want to say that this story is better than the message it's sending. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Do you agree with that? I think it's kind of a simplistic...
You're saying it's not a simple morality tale.
No.
Which I think if you look at it as only that, that is weaker. But I definitely agree that it's better than just a simple morality tale. It's just an interesting story about interesting characters in their own right.
Right. I think it's really just a vehicle to explore characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the supernatural, I tried to keep all spoilers away because I've had this book since it came out. I haven't just read it because I had to for a podcast. And I was trying to keep away from all spoilers, but my general, the impression I got was, it's like Groundhog Day mixed with Scott Pilgrim. But it's really not. It's definitely a different direction than that kind of trope of revisiting things because it's not the same as
No.
I think that there's a lot of kind of gimmicky storytelling things in Scott Pilgrim, in like little art things. Like there's some of that in here, like little captions and things like that. I think he refines it more in this. Like I think he's clearly matured as an artist some, and this is cleaner and more refined.
He has clearly matured.
Yes.
You know, I think he had just turned 30 when all the Scott Pilgrim, I think about when he did the book 6 or so, he was turning 30. And that was 3 or 4 years ago. He's 34, 35, something. I don't know how math works.
Years, age, time.
Mm-hmm. He's really got the chops to, be putting together good comics, and he didn't just get lucky and had one good story in him, which is kind of what I was dreading. I mean, by the end, to do 6 books of Scott Pilgrim and have them be as good as they were, I mean, my impression by book 6 is Brian Lee O'Malley really realizes what is good about Scott Pilgrim, why it works.
Yes.
And he's able to capitalize on that. Reading Seconds, this follow-up, and I Lost at Sea, you know, he wrote before, right?
Right. That was his first big thing.
Yeah. Haven't read it. Don't know the first thing about it. But having read this, it's clear that he's moved beyond. Like, he knew what was good about that story. It's clear reading this that he knows, you know, what can go into a compelling story, what can make compelling characters. And you're starting to see sort of his motifs, sort of like how Neil Gaiman has to put gay angels into everything.
Right.
You're seeing sort of like how Katie's sort of not boss was this responsible put together gay guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Wallace Wells sort of, except not as ridiculous.
No, but he, I mean, yeah.
I mean, pretty close analog.
You see his voice, his signature, yes, to a certain extent. I mean, if you read, like, authors, a lot of them have very identifiable tones and voices. Yeah. And yes, just like that, Brian Lee O'Malley is the same thing. You can see,
yeah,
you can see those things come up again. And it's,
mm-hmm, and as we discussed, Katie is very much like Scott.
She is
probably just as flawed, and she also, I mean, the same motif of sort of being at war with your dark side,
mm-hmm,
which was the whole dark Scott motif in Scott Pilgrim. The whole dark house spirit ends up being her, like another version of herself.
Right. And she just has to take care of herself.
Exactly. Same idea. Whether that's going to appear again and again, like, I think that there's only so many times you can use that motif before it's just like, okay, I think you need some therapy, Brian Lee O'Malley. There's some interesting symbolism in here, or at least some evocative symbols. Do you want to talk about those things, you know,
like,
just sort of the design decisions of...
What do you mean?
Cauldrons, mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
Liz is a homeless woman. I don't know, just some very interesting sort of decisions. Like
I think it's... The mushrooms are... We talked about signatures and voices, mm-hmm, and tones, like... There's two things I think about when I think about mushrooms,
mm-hmm,
or three, actually. I mean, and I think that connects back to her, is obviously food. You just erased everything. There's obviously the food influence, which is she's a chef, but yes, I think of psychedelic, you know, drugs, and I think of Mario.
Yeah, Super Mario. There was a lot of Super Mario.
And
in Scott Pilgrim's subspace and all that.
A lot of video game stuff in there. And this is, yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly, it makes you think about, it's, mushrooms are, I think he has a reader, this generation, the people who read Scott Pilgrim and really dug it, the people who, the video game generation, they, when they see mushrooms, that's like, it hits them, like they're transformative. And they're powerful, and they change things. They change you.
Evocative.
Exactly. So you understand. And the cauldron, I think there's clearly a lot of things about this house spirit are callbacks to kind of myths of and folklore. And that cauldron is we don't really use. And again, it's another cooking implement. It's a giant pot. And it's not, it's archaic now. We don't really call things cauldrons. You know, generally people cook in pots now, not cauldrons. And I think that it is clearly meant to evoke that folklore, like a witch from... There's lots of witches in Shakespeare, to be fair. But I was thinking of Macbeth. But it's clearly meant Toyo Toyo, Boy in Trouble, all that crap. It's meant to make you feel, I think, evoke that feeling of... you know, witchery, sorcery, supernatural power and mystery. And it was found in an abandoned fireplace. And, you know, it's just, I think that's a menace, broken down building that they're trying to restore. And it all ties back together. It's very artistic, very intelligent choices. They all those things work very well.
Why skeletons, do you think?
I think that they're, I mean, it's the epitome of something without life, death. They're like, you think of a dead person, it's just like completely dead as a skeleton. And I don't think he wanted to evoke zombies. I think that's, there was a point where he's at this point where she's, I think if there were zombies walking around, like things with eyeballs hanging out and stuff, I think that would draw too much attention to them and not to the situation. Where there's clearly things are wrong, but I think skeletons are more, I mean, well, first of all, they're stark white. They pop out very, very clearly. And I think they don't they're not so distracting as zombies are. Like, if they have people with flesh bits hanging off, or if they were just monsters, like, skeletons are former people to the utmost degree. There's also the chest of drawers, which is the symbol for this, basically the symbol for the spirit in the house, mm-hmm. the house around, which I think that's kind of interesting as well. It's like where you store clothes, and mm-hmm. she's, you know, looks like a homeless woman or a hipster. Very evocative. Clear choices there, I think.
There's possibly the matter of the names of the restaurants, which seems the names of the restaurants and the names of the streets where the properties were at.
Right.
Which was Lucky's and Seconds, obviously the title of, it almost feels more like he's just saying, this is my second thing. This is my follow up. This is.
Well, I mean, it's a thing with a lot of meaning behind it, because Seconds, mm-hmm. obviously, as the name of restaurants would say, it's yes, so good you want more.
You want more, exactly.
But Seconds, like, a second chance. Mm-hmm. Seconds, like, hey, this is my next, my second big thing after Scott Pilgrim, like,
yeah,
calling his own shot a little bit there. I mean, I think there's a lot of that in here. What's the name of that street where the shitty...
Like, the one is Lucknow.
Lucknow,
I think the shitty one is Lucknow, yeah, but I'm trying to find the other. It's Talmadge.
Talmadge, which, I mean, Lucknow is, that's, you know, the name of the crappy place that is like a money pit is called Lucky's on Lucknow Street, yeah. underneath a bridge, which I think is supposed to clearly also, you know, evoke what lives under bridges, homeless people and trolls.
Mm-hmm.
All that subtext kind of filters in as you read.
Of course, this is not where Liz comes from.
No, it is not. She comes from the house restaurant. She comes from Seconds. The malevolent clone spirit of Katie comes from the building under the bridge, formerly Lucky's, which, you know, there you go. Not Lucky.
Has to be in Canada, right?
Probably, yeah. Well, he doesn't live in Canada anymore.
Well, I know, but, like, there's people in the restaurant speaking French. There's no way in hell any place in the United States looks like this.
That's true. And it's snowing.
You look at the cityscape, there's no way those buildings, that's just weird.
And it's cold, super cold.
Yeah. There's no place in this country that looks like that. It has to be. It doesn't specifically say anything about Canada. It could be a completely made up place. It could be, I don't know, this could be in England, but my money's on Canada.
I would say Canada as well.
Yeah.
If I was going to pin a real place on it.
It seems like a good enough note to end on. It's a big motif throughout the whole book of sort of getting older.
Yes.
And how that ties into dealing with the choices that you've made.
Right.
As an older adult.
I mean, the main character is 29, and it starts with her basically saying, hey, we started this restaurant and made all my friends, and now most of my friends are gone, and now the new people mm-hmm. are all really young, and I don't like them very much. Their personalities yeah. are annoying, that's kind of what happens when you get, as you get older, mm-hmm. young people get annoying.
I love the line, the new kids were like a bunch of stylish, sullen babies.
Yeah.
It's pretty adorable.
Exactly. And they're not that much younger than her, but it's true.
No. Well, I mean, she's 29 and they're like 21, which when you're closer to 30 and 21-year-olds might as well be 16.
Who might as well be 13.
Yeah, they look and act completely like children to you. And, you know, you can interact with them and treat them like adults, but it's just hard to see them as that. They're pretty much just like children. The whole first part of your 20s are, you know, trying to stop being that.
Yeah. And that's a motif in Scott Pilgrim a little bit about mm-hmm. learning from your mistakes
and growing up.
Growing up, yeah. Getting, yeah. learning. And this is the, this is even, I mean, the age is a big part of it. And obviously learning about how your choices define your life, and you can't, I don't know, the whole road less traveled and et cetera, and et cetera. Like, mm-hmm. And I think like what we touched on earlier was that this is more that whole story about not learning about, you know, what your choices mean and what they mean about you, is that it's not really about that. It's about being you, about not thinking about the past, thinking about being who you are. And that's what Katie, like, you know, she learns at the end that this evil spirit that's been changing, is menacing and changing space time and all this shit, is her. It's a mirror of her. And all she has to do is love it and take care of it. And suddenly it goes away. Like, it doesn't, all the bad stuff disappears. And it's kind of simple, but it's nice. It's, I hate using this term, but magical realism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like that. I don't really like the way that the thing, what that thing has turned into from its literary origins. But this is as close as you're going to get to. I mean, Scott Pilgrim was clearly that. This is a little bit closer to realism than that, but there's, it's still magical realism to a certain extent. And his talent and skill are top notch, and it shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, folks, that will bring this segment to a close. Next week, we are going to be tackling Dragon Ball. The original Dragon Ball, not Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball, volumes 1-6 by Akira Toriyama.
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah. Eric wants to know what I think about all this stuff.
All that Japan shit.
Yep. But read along. And with that, I think I'll bring this episode to a close. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. We are on facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. On Twitter at HBCHour. On iTunes. Search Handsome Boys Comics Hour, you find us. Please leave us good reviews. Subscribe. It really helps us out. Both of those things. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. So you can see most of the other things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
And with that, folks, we're going to call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.